guts to let the arrow fly? Was it the wisest choice?
100,
Kendra muttered, releasing the string. A cloud of arrows zipped through the air, spreading wide as Torrens ducked behind their shields. Dozens of arrows thunked against shields. Amulons looked like a pincushion. One of the rheumators and one of the servitors staggered, arrows having pierced their legs. An Alcitor had an arrow in his meaty shoulder. And then Seth found he could not move. He could see and think, but his muscles refused to respond. A shadow fell across him as a huge green dragon plopped down behind him, crushing bushes and undergrowth beneath its bulk. What was he supposed to do? He couldn't budge. From the corner of his eye, he saw the head whip forward and the huge jaws clamp shut around Kendra, totally engulfing her. Seth tried to scream. He tried to reach for his sister. The dragon fear held him utterly paralyzed. Then Seth tipped and felt himself being dragged. Though aware of the hands supporting him, he could make no motion to help. The green dragon sprang upward, taking flight, wind ruffling the surrounding vegetation as enormous wings heaved. Two other dragons, a black one with large spikes down the neck and the one from the feast with a face full of tentacles, dropped from the sky, landing nearby, the ground quaking at the impact. Seth could not blink. He could not bend his legs or his waist. Eve was dragging him, stiff as a board, diagonally away from the road, into the cover of heavy bushes. Eve dropped him flat on his back and rummaged through his satchel. A flask came to his lips, and she was pouring fluid into his mouth. For a terrifying moment, Seth worried the liquid would drown him. But suddenly he could swallow, and he gulped down the rest. It was the courage potion. Control over his body returned. He sat up, furious. "That dragon ate Kendra," he said, staring up at the green dragon rising higher into the sky. What was the range of his lightning sword?
"Not here,"
Eve whispered, dragging him to his feet.
"Not now. Run!"
The other two dragons were both biting at something. Tanu, perhaps? There was no time to think. Seth followed Eve. Her pace felt slow. The boots were helping him. Seth was in shock over Kendra. He could barely process what he had seen. Kendra had been gulped down before she had any chance to react, and now Tanu was perhaps getting killed too. There was no time to absorb it. He had to survive. For the good of the sanctuary and for the hope of any payback, his first job was to escape. Was that even possible? If the dragons were going to get him, shouldn't he turn and give them a fight to remember?
"Dragons are great hunters," Eve said breathlessly. "I'll only be able to cloak us for so long. Right now we look like fleeing deer. You should hide."
"Let's stick together," Seth said.
"We're both more likely to die if we're together," Eve said. "Do it for me. Do it for you."
Seth knew he could run faster without her, but how much did that matter against dragons? Wasn't her ability to disguise them more important? Was she trying to use him as bait to lure the dragons away from her? If she was, he would do it, and kill both dragons single-handedly if he had to.
"Where do I go?" Seth asked. "Try the cave in that hillside," she said. "They might pass it by, or it might run narrow and deep. Maybe you can escape."
He saw the dark cavity in the steep, rocky slope. It might go back only a few feet. At least it would provide some cover, and the opening was much too small for a dragon to enter.
"Do it," Calvin advised from his pocket. "Splitting up is smart."
Seth broke off from Eve toward the hillside, upping his pace to a full sprint. Amazed at the length and speed of his strides, Seth doubted he had ever run half this fast. Behind him, dragons roared. As he slipped into the little cave, his last glance back showed the dragon with the tentacled face rising into the sky. Seth rushed deeper into the cave. It was more than an indentation, but it narrowed to a dead end after about 20 feet. At least the space looked empty. Seth kept still, holding his breath.
"Come out!"
a slithery voice called, like many voices speaking at once, all of them with too much saliva in their mouths.
"I saw you enter, caretaker. Surrender!"
Holding his breath, Seth pressed back against the rear of the cave. Hopefully Eve was escaping while this dragon was distracted. Of course, there had been two. What were his assets? The sword in his hand could shoot a bolt of lightning. He also had the vial of horrors. Was now an effective time to try the vial, cornered in a cave, against a single dragon? Who would be more scared? Would the courage potion help protect him? A head snaked into the cave, mostly filling the tunnel, and a mass of squirmy tentacles writhed toward him. Seth felt fear, but was not overpowered. He slashed his sword through the grasping tentacles, severing at least 4, the blade passing through them cleanly. Ichor fountained, and the head withdrew.
"Good one," Calvin encouraged. "For Kendra," Seth muttered.
"You'll pay for that," the dragon threatened. "Out you come, or I roast you."
"Too scared to fight me face to face?" Seth cried.
"You dare insult my courage?"
"I always heard Wormface was the most cowardly dragon," Seth yelled. "Fights human children from a distance."
"Orders or not, you die now," the dragon declared.
The head wriggled back into the cave, and Seth held his sword ready. Suddenly, the head flopped to the floor and stopped advancing, tangled tentacles squishy and limp, the severed ones still oozing juices. Seth stared, wondering if it might be a ruse. The dragon seemed weirdly still for how angry it had sounded.
"Hurry, boy, come quick,"
a deep voice boomed.
"Who's there?" Seth asked.
"Your dragon slayer,"
the voice replied.
Now Seth recognized the voice. It was the somber knight.
Stepping on mushy tentacles, Seth scrambled around the dragon's head and past the somewhat narrower neck until he exited the cave. The huge knight had to be at least 10 feet tall, and he stood beside the spot where the scaly neck had been cleaved in two. The gigantic body of the dragon lay lifeless. The knight clutched a sword with a blade longer than Seth from head to foot.
"Eve," Seth said, anxiously looking for her.
"We must aid her,"
the somber knight said.
"And your sister."
"A dragon ate Kendra," Seth said, mildly surprised he could spit out the dreadful words.
"No,"
the somber knight said.
"Your sister lives."
Chapter 14. Captive. In the moist, humid enclosure, Kendra sat on a damp, muscular tongue surrounded by meaty walls. She could only faintly see the cruel fangs and the mucosal surfaces, which meant there was no light. Mysterious fumes and gurgles issued from the clenching tunnel at the rear of her prison. The environment gently rocked, bobbed, and swayed, evidence that they were flying, but also that her captor was trying to keep her level. Covering her nose, Kendra attempted to ignore when the tongue rippled beneath her. She tried not to get saliva on her bare skin because it burned and tingled. What was going to happen to her? If the dragon meant to swallow her, why not get on with it? Her captor was obviously taking her somewhere. What if it intended to feed her to baby dragons? The image came too vividly to her mind.
or maybe she would be dropped from a great height, or tortured. She still had all of her gear. The sack of gales was an option, but did she want a windstorm inside of a dragon mouth? Not when flying through the air. Anything that might make the dragon spit her out would not end well for her. And so she sat as still as possible in the uncomfortably warm, rank air, trying very hard not to overanalyze what might come next. She paid attention to acceleration tugging on her as they turned or sped up or descended. Suddenly Kendra felt like she was inside a plunging elevator, followed by a rush of forward movement, and then she came to a halt. A moment later, her enclosure tipped forward and opened, dumping her onto a rocky floor. Her hair had spilled over her face, temporarily screening her view. Knees and elbows smarting from the tumble, Kendra pushed her hair back and stared up at Celebrant. He on his dais in his cavernous hall, she on the floor like a mess coughed up by a giant cat.
"That did not take long," the Dragon King said contentedly. "Hardly an hour past midday."
Having seen only the inside of the mouth of her captor, Kendra looked back at the dragon behind her. Emerald green scales covered a creature nearly as immense as Celebrant.
"She offered no trouble,"
said a voice that sounded like dozens of women speaking together. A pair of fins just behind her head fanned out and then retracted.
"Excellent, Jaleesa," Celebrant said. "And her brother?"
"Namra Manchiro were right behind me," Jaleesa said.
"And a manservant who desecrated the corpse of Madrigus?"
Celebrant asked.
"He was with the boy," Jaleesa said. "They had no chance for escape."
"Were Namra Manchiro following you here?"
Celebrant asked.
"Not that I could see," Jaleesa said.
"Berzog, Luria, go investigate,"
Celebrant ordered. A dragon covered in quills and an amber dragon took flight, exiting the vast room.
"Jaleesa, congratulations on delivering the girl unharmed,"
Celebrant said.
"You are dismissed."
The green dragon moved away. Kendra got to her feet, her clothes gooey with dragon spit.
"Don't hurt Tanu," Kendra said.
"Your manservant is already dead,"
Celebrant said.
"I want your brother alive for now."
"You won't get away with this," Kendra said.
"I will accomplish so much more than this, you ridiculous girl,"
Celebrant said.
"I'm just barely getting started. You can make things easier on yourself and your brother, and on all of your allies at Blackwell Keep."
"How?"
Kendra asked.
"Unconditional surrender,"
Celebrant said.
"Relinquish the caretaker's medallion. Name me sole caretaker of Wormroost. In return, I vow to see you safely delivered to the borders of the sanctuary, to depart with any of your allies who care to join you."
Kendra clutched the medallion.
"You are no caretaker. You care only about yourself and maybe the dragons. This sanctuary is meant for all who live here, and it is meant to protect the world from you. I won't give it up."
"I can slay you at my leisure,"
Celebrant said casually.
"I guess you can," Kendra said.
"Foolish girl,"
Celebrant said.
"Do not tempt me."
"Was this the plan Ronadin gave you?"
Kendra asked. Celebrant narrowed his eyes.
"What did he tell you?"
"He told you how to win the war," Kendra said.
"The Dark Unicorn did bring some information that will aid our cause,"
Celebrant said.
"I lay my own traps. Catching you took less effort than a yawn."
"What did he tell you?"
Kendra wondered.
"You will know soon enough,"
Celebrant said.
If you live to see it. I will give you some time to think. Perhaps once I have your brother, you will be more persuadable.
Don't count on it, Kendra said, secretly worried she might do anything to save Seth's life.
She's alive? Seth asked. You're sure?
The somber knight gave a nod.
First, we have another dragon to punish.
He waved an arm, and a huge bull came plodding up to him. The animal was made of tar, with horns carved out of stone, and the tall knight had to reach up to pat the neck. Pulling with one arm, the somber knight leaped astride the bull, a feat that should have been impossible in his heavy armor. The bull turned and charged in the direction of the black dragon with spikes down the neck.
Chiro!
The somber knight called, his voice booming.
Come face your doom!
The black dragon had been moving away from Seth and the knight, presumably still hunting Eve. But now the dragon turned, eyes flashing. Chiro sprang into the air and glided low toward the somber knight.
Butcher!
Chiro called out, her voice a soprano choir.
Today your atrocities end!
Seth considered ducking back into the cave in case the dragon sprayed fire, or worse. The somber knight stood up on the back of the bull, still racing straight for the dragon, and started twirling a chain with a grapnel at the end. As the dragon's mouth opened, the somber knight hurled the grappling hook, which caught hold of Chiro's lower jaw. The dragon tried to swerve away, but the somber knight leapt from the back of the bull, chain tautening in one hand, sword gripped in the other, and began a wide swing. His weight jerked Chiro's head down, and the somber knight curved swiftly into the air. Crashing into the dragon's side, he plunged the sword up to the hilt. With a shriek, Chiro lost altitude and plowed into the ground, tumbling and tearing up huge chunks of earth. Sword in hand, after it ripped free of the dragon in the landing, the somber knight rolled to his feet and began hacking at a wing as he dashed along the body. Wheeling around, the bull of tar lowered its horns and rammed the far side of the dragon. As the somber knight sprinted toward the base of the neck, Chiro arched her head around and exhaled bubbling dark blue liquid all over him. The fluid sizzled on the ground, acrid fumes rising, and though the knight was drenched, he charged forward and slashed the base of the neck. Chiro tried to bite the somber knight, but he bashed her head aside with his shield and plunged his sword into her eye. Tail flailing, wings spasming, the dragon withdrew her head, and the somber knight opened the base of the neck wider with a mighty swipe of his sword. Dark blue fluid fizzed from the wound as Chiro slumped to the ground, twitching but no longer trying to rise. The somber knight stomped over and chopped off the head.
You got her, Seth said, drawing closer.
Stay back, lad,
the somber knight said.
A corrosive bile could eat right through your boots.
He removed the grapnel from the dragon's mouth and started winding the chain.
It didn't ruin your armor, Seth said.
Not much can harm this armor,
the somber knight said. Coming to Seth.
That was amazing, Seth said. You killed two dragons.
It's my job,
the somber knight said.
You made the first one easy. Dreadwolves sometimes shelter in that cave. Lucky for you, it was empty today. The second dragon took some effort.
You cut off her head, Seth said.
Best way to be sure.
The somber knight said.
Dragons can be resilient.
The somber knight whistled, and his bull came plodding over.
Is it made of tar? Seth asked.
Mostly,
the somber knight said.
I have ridden to battle on Umbro many times. He's a Dolian, kind of like a golem. He's fast and tireless.
I got attacked by a Dolian once, Seth said. It was shaped like a big person.
They come in many forms, the somber knight said. No real life in them, no personality. Umbro just follows orders, which makes him much more useful than many people I have met.
How did you find me? Seth asked.
I had a tip from Lord Dalgarel, the somber knight said. I sensed when the dragons declared war. I'm in tune with the treaties and boundaries of Wormroost. As I was preparing to depart, Dalgarel came and told me where you, Kendra, Eve, and your manservant were heading.
We need to find Eve, Seth said. Right here, she said, seeming to appear at his side out of some wisps of steam. You are still hiding, Seth said. Can't be too careful, Eve said. Nice work, Ryland.
Few have bothered to learn my name, the somber knight said.
I like the old stories, Eve said. What about Tanu? Seth asked.
I noticed your manservant over yonder, Ryland said.
Seth peered in the direction the somber knight had indicated and noticed a cloud of gas shaped exactly like Tanu. He took a gaseous potion, Seth said. Where to now? Eve asked.
More dragons will be on their way, Ryland said. Not all are as foolhardy and incompetent as Chiro, or as careless as Numram. First, we should get back on the road.
What about the Taurens? Seth asked.
Explain, Ryland said.
Amulon and the Taurens forced us off the road, Seth said bitterly. They basically handed us over to the dragons.
I arrived too late to witness that, Ryland said. Yet your words reverberate with truth. Amulon has committed treason.
He isn't alone, Seth said.
Amulon!
Ryland shouted in a voice that rivaled dragon roars.
Come face your judgment!
The somber knight mounted Umbro, then extended a gauntleted hand down to Eve. After hoisting her aboard, he hauled Seth up as well. The back of the bull was too wide for Seth or Eve to straddle without doing the splits, so they knelt behind Ryland. The bull did not run smoothly, and Seth found it took all of his concentration to maintain his balance. In a few moments, they were back on the road, confronting Amulon and about 20 other Taurens, who huddled together, weapons ready. They looked distrustful and angry.
Amulon,
Ryland said, his voice more grave than Seth had ever heard it.
You forced the active caretakers of Wormroost off the road and into mortal peril. How plead you?
For the first time since Seth had met Amulon, the Rumator appeared uncertain.
Celebrant is also a caretaker. I was acting under his orders.
Celebrant was a lesser caretaker who has declared war against the rightful caretakers of Wormroost,
Ryland said.
You side with the dragons in this conflict.
Amulon straightened.
We do.
And you are guilty of forcing the caretakers off the road?
Ryland asked. Amulon thrust his powerful chest forward.
I am proud.
Then I find you guilty of treason,
Ryland said.
As no lives have been lost yet resulting from your actions, Seth can choose between death and exile for you.
Wait, I choose? Seth asked.
Yes,
Ryland said.
Shall I claim his head or banish him?
Seth frowned. Kendra is alive?
For now, yes,
Ryland said.
I need no mercy from a whelp, Amulon said. If you want my head, you clattering relic from days long gone, come try to take it.
I await your command,
Ryland said to Seth.
Exile, Seth said.
Not fair to kill him if we all lived.
Very well,
Ryland said, raising his sword above his head.
Amulon, son of Waro, seeing as you speak for the Taurens and a score of your fellows aided your crime, I hereby revoke your claim to your territory, along with access to the thoroughfares reserved for the friends of Blackwell Keep.
Celebrant will reinstate us,
Amulon said.
Your new domain will encompass the Barrows, Lackluster Wood, and the adjoining meadows,
Ryland continued.
That is a domain of haunts and shades,
Amulon scoffed.
And now of the Taurens as well,
Ryland said.
Sleep lightly. Get to your new domain promptly. Anywhere else on this preserve, you are in extreme violation of trespass, with prejudice.
He slashed his sword twice in their direction.
This cannot be,
Amulon said, beginning to look panicked.
They'll be hunted anywhere else they go, Eve said. Fair game to any creature.
Those Taurens still at the Herdlands are also trespassing,
Ryland said.
Warn them, if you can. Should they linger longer than a day, their lives are forfeit. Once they have departed, re-entry is of course barred, and you will be rejected by the protections of this road the moment my sword touches the ground.
Amulon and the Taurens all scattered to the left side of the road, all except one Rumator, who glared at Ryland until the tip of his sword touched the dirt. Brilliant streaks of energy enveloped the stubborn Rumator, hurling him off the road to land on his side, fur badly singed. One of the servitors shot an arrow at the somber knight, but it failed to cross the edge of the road, deflected with a flash.
Begone, Taurens,
Ryland called.
I will consider your lingering an invitation to combat. Do not forget, I am among the predators who can hunt you outside the barrows.
All this for bothering children?
Amulon cried.
This is for siding with the dragons against the caretakers,
Ryland declared.
Let it be a warning to all.
The Taurens ran away.
You have some serious power, Seth said.
In this instance, my power derives from the treaty they violated,
Ryland said.
The dragons violated the treaty too, Seth said.
Which freed me to attack them,
Ryland said.
But the territories are tied to direct treaties with the caretakers. I could banish the Taurens from their homes for treason. There is no equivalent for the dragons, except I can revoke Celebrant's status as a caretaker.
You can? Seth asked.
He declared war,
Ryland said.
I can and will revoke his status. I will approach in my capacity as a herald, and I will endeavor to rescue your sister. I will likely perish.
Seth didn't want the knight to die. How did he speak so calmly of taking action that could end him? Could he die and still save Kendra?
Celebrant has her? Seth asked.
I strongly suspect so,
Ryland said.
How is she all right? Seth said. I saw the dragon eat her.
You saw Jaleesa scoop her up,
Ryland said.
I saw two from a distance. The dragon did not swallow, but rather flew off toward Skyhold. If your sister had been killed, I would feel the crime. Such an act would reverberate across all the treaties of Wormroost.
You don't think you can survive rescuing Kendra? Seth asked.
If I go as a herald in a time of war, the dragons cannot attack me,
Ryland said.
But stripping Celebrant of his caretakership constitutes an act of aggression, and that invites retaliation. A herald brings a message. Executing justice changes the nature of my visit. but the Dragon King status must be eliminated. The downgrade will weaken the Dragon Rebellion, reduce their options. The dragons will kill me for it. I don't know how I could get away. So I will do my best to save your sister before I expire.
I'll come help, Seth said.
No,
Ryland said.
You cannot be jeopardized. Worm Roost is in plenty of danger without handing both caretakers to the dragons.
Then what am I supposed to do? Seth asked.
Stay alive,
Ryland said.
Find shelter for the festival night in a roadhouse if need be. Then get back to Blackwell Keep alive and resist the dragons.
We'll have to go by Stormguard Castle, Seth said. You don't know the story, do you?
Stormguard Castle was never under my purview,
Ryland said.
It predates Wormroost. Old, powerful magic resides there. You would be wise to get no closer than necessary.
The translucent, gassy form of Tanu drifted onto the road. Hey, Tanu, Seth said. More dead dragons over there. Tanu covered his ears and shook his head, a pained expression on his wispy face. I bet you want their guts, Seth said. You probably can't carry much more anyhow, even if you weren't made of smoke. Tanu slumped theatrically. Kendra is alive, Seth informed him. The Somber Knight is going to try to rescue her. Tanu brightened and gave a thumbs up.
I will most likely fail,
Ryland said.
If I fall, I will instruct Umbro to come find you, Seth, and to help you get home. If I live, I will come help you myself. You will probably get no assistance at all. The dragons will most likely destroy both of us.
You are not very positive, Eve said.
I am positive we will all eventually die,
Ryland said.
Only the timing remains in question. Soon, by all realistic forecasts.
He's not the cheerful knight, Seth said. The somber knight looked skyward.
Berzog and Luria are circling up there, keeping their distance while we are on the road, I imagine. Wait, what is this?
Seth saw a griffin approaching in the distance, flying low, with three other dragons in pursuit. The griffin dove really low, disappearing into some trees, then popped out, going a different direction. That's Tempest, Seth said. He waved his arms and shouted, Come on, Tempest! You can make it! Tempest gained a little altitude, then plunged directly toward Seth and the road. The two circling dragons moved to intercept, but they were too slow, and the three in pursuit trailed by too far. All the dragons veered away as Tempest landed on the road. Seth ran to the griffin and hugged her neck. Her feathers were damp with perspiration, and flecks of lather stood out on her fur. We might have a faster way home, Seth said.
You want to risk the dragons?
Ryland asked. She got here, didn't she? Seth replied.
She will not be as maneuverable with riders,
Ryland said. What if one of the riders can disguise her? Eve asked innocently. The somber knight wrapped his helmet twice and pointed at her.
That thought has potential. Indeed, it does.
Chapter 15 Rescuers.
I have bad news, and I have worse news, Doran announced the day after Nox and Tess had arrived at Blackwell Keep. And a bit of minor good news, and some random news.
Nox, Tess, and Doran stood in the nearest courtyard to the rooms where the satyrs were living. Several dragons patrolled up high in the distance.
You're starting to lose me, Nox said. What is the bad news?
The griffins it was sending to rescue Seth and Kendra are no longer just getting turned back,
Doran said.
They're getting killed by dragons. We've lost two so far.
What is the good news? Tess asked.
I finally learned how to make my yo-yo sleep, Doran said. You know, when it reaches the end of a string and just hangs there spinning. But a flick of the wrist will make it wind up again. It takes the right touch. I think I've got it.
What's the worst news? Knox asked.
Still no sign of the barrel or the person who, did harm to the goblin, Doran said. The whole keep is on alert, and there are no leads.
He gave Tess a tentative smile.
But I'm sure we can all sleep tight and have happy dreams.
I know the goblin is dead, Tess said. This is a scary place. What is the random news?
I swiped a pie from the kitchen and ate it, Doran said. The whole pie. By myself. That could have been good news, but I saved none to share. I have selfish moments. Peach pie. Never trust me around peaches.
I'm sick of waiting, Knox said. What can we do?
We really haven't been waiting very long, Doran said. You just arrived last night.
I want to help Seth and Kendra, Knox said. They're in real danger, and I wouldn't mind seeing some dragons up close.
Doran's eyes widened. He gestured at the sky.
Those dragons are the perfect distance. Most people only see dragons up close one time. The experience does not last long.
But the magic walls will keep them out, Knox said. Can't you lure some down? Leave out a dead deer or something?
Doran put a hand to his forehead.
Where are we supposed to hunt deer? And why would a dragon want our shabby meal? These are apex predators. They eat whatever they want, pretty much whenever they want.
It would be fun to see one closer, Tess said, but not if it eats us.
You have seen dragons flying around all day, Doran said. Few ever see a dragon and live to tell the tale.
But they're so far away, Knox said. They almost look like kites.
And where are the fairies? Tess asked. I thought this place was supposed to be so magical.
The fairies are probably hiding like everything else with a brain, Doran said. The dragons declared war.
Kind of a boring war, Knox said with a sigh.
Doran raised his hands.
That's the best kind of war. Trust me.
Have you been in a war? Knox asked.
Doran folded his arms.
I've seen plenty on TV, and I lent a hand against some demons once. Not a comfortable day.
Newell came trotting over, a shimmery length of fabric folded under one arm. He looked pleased.
How did it go this time? Knox asked.
He finally gave me something, Newell said.
Not bagpipes, Tess asked.
Gripper is pretending he never mentioned bagpipes, Newell said. I keep pestering him to let us recover his investment for him by helping Kendra and Seth. That troll is stubborn. I was as frustrated as a lumberjack in a petrified forest. But he finally gave me this.
He unfolded the fabric with a flourish. It was a hooded cape.
Behold, the Cloak of Innocence.
That sounds weak, Knox said.
Shows what you know, Newell said with a huff. If somebody is new to a preserve, has caused no harm and intends no harm, this creates a powerful shield around them and any travelling with them, even if the companions are scoundrels.
How much protection? Knox asked.
It makes you invulnerable, Newell said. It was crafted by the wizards who first designed the preserves to provide complete protection to neutral visitors. It draws on the power of the treaty that founded the preserve. The whole sanctuary would have to fall in order for the cloak to fail.
What's the catch? Doran asked. These things always have a catch.
Don't interrupt, Newell said. I was getting to it.
If anyone under the protection of the cloak harms a creature or steals something, the protection is ruined for all.
So the companions shouldn't be scoundrels, Knox said.
Or go near peach pie, Tess added with a smile.
Why peach pie? Newell asked.
I love peach pie.
Kids, Doran said with a vague shrug. You never know what arbitrary examples they'll mention next.
Newell looked betrayed.
You didn't all share a peach pie without me.
Who would share peach pie?
Doran asked, absently wiping the corner of his mouth. The cloak, Knox prompted.
Yes, the cloak, Newell said, shaking it slightly. This might grant you the freedom you had last time, Knox. We can use your innocence to rescue Kendra and Seth.
I want to help them, Knox said. I feel terrible I messed up security here when I came through the barrel. Would the cloak protect against dragons?
It should, Newell said.
How will we know it's working? Knox asked.
It will kind of gleam,
Newell said, putting the cloak around Knox's shoulders. The entire piece of clothing turned black.
Oh, dear, Doran said.
What have you been up to?
Newell asked.
Nothing, Knox said. I've been with you guys.
Newell hit himself in the forehead with the heel of his hand.
You took the scepter. After you brought it here, that must have counted as stealing something.
Am I innocent? Tess asked. All eyes slowly turned to her.
She doesn't even drink the milk,
Doran murmured.
No, Newell said. We couldn't. She's so little.
I'm not little, Tess said. I'm 10. 2 digits. Same as most people.
Most humans, Newell corrected.
Worth a try, Knox said, taking off the cloak and putting it over his little sister's shoulders. It shrank a little to fit her and turned a gleaming white with faint hints of other colors.
Looks like we have a winner, Doran said.
Take it off,
Newell said, removing the cloak. The fabric returned to a shimmery gray.
You'll draw attention.
I have magic, Tess said. I knew I was really a fairy.
Knox rolled his eyes. Newell glared at him.
There is definitely a certain magic to innocence, Doran said.
Why don't you go play with my yo-yo for a little bit?
He handed it over. Tess accepted the toy with a dubious look.
This is hard. It gets tangled.
Up and down, Doran said. Pop your wrist a little. It takes practice. Try it over by the wall. Stiller air there.
You want to talk without me,
Tess said. She skipped over to the wall.
We can't really take advantage of an innocent little girl,
Newell asked. You took advantage of me, Knox complained, with the bear that was actually a troll.
An ogre,
Newell corrected.
And with the dragons, Knox said. That was primarily Seth taking advantage, Newell said.
We were definitely accomplices,
Doran confessed.
It's the same, Knox said. She'll be safe. Were you safe?
Newell asked.
I think so, Knox said. More or less. Probably less, Doran said. But you survived.
What would Stan and Ruth do to us if we even suggested it?
Newell said. Stan and Ruth are not our grandparents, Knox said. The Larsons are. Seth and Kendra are my cousins.
That doesn't make you disposable,
Doran said.
How safe are we here?
Knox asked.
There's a murderer loose. Didn't they say the road is protected? We might be safer if we go. And we might actually be useful, too.
Newell stroked his chin.
Not a bad argument. Let's face it. The girl will be safe with the cloak on, and Kendra and Seth need help.
And I'm sick of being stuck in this boring fort with a killer,
Knox said.
I want to do something.
This could all go terribly wrong, Doran said. We could get eaten. And by we, I mean you and your sister. Newell and I have a knack for escape.
Especially when we're with somebody slower who can serve as bait,
Newell said. Doran elbowed him.
As long as we don't steal anything or harm anybody, the cloak protects all of us,
Doran summarized.
But it turned black for me, Knox said. Under the protection of Tess, we all get to start fresh,
Newell said.
If one of us under the protection breaks the spell, we are all exposed,
Doran reminded him.
Then we don't break the spell, Knox said, and we'll all be fine. Easy.
Newell cringed.
Don't label any endeavor as easy, no matter how much you think it. Is this your first day on Earth?
Avoid saying nothing can go wrong, all our trouble is behind us, and this ship can never sink.
Common knowledge, Doran said, even among the least superstitious.
I'm not superstitious, Nock said. It doesn't matter if I think something will be easy or hard. It will be what it is going to be.
This guy might become a philosopher, Doran said.
Newell put his fists on his woolly hips.
A really unlucky philosopher.
We have what we need, Nock said. Let's go. I doubt we can get permission, Newell said, and we can't just march off down the road. We'll be spotted.
I've been scouting, Doran said. There's a secret way out of the fort. One below a wall without guards.
Could we make it to cover? Newell asked.
Maybe 30 yards to cover, Doran said. Then we can stay under trees until we join up with the road out of sight.
Why the road if we have the cloak? Knox asked.
We want as much safety as possible, Newell said. With Tess wearing the cloak, we can venture off the road as needed.
I'm excited to learn the lay of the land here, Doran said.
Dragon sanctuaries are legendary, Newell agreed. And of course, we want to find Seth and Kendra.
Stan and Ruth will flip when they find us missing, Knox said.
I'll leave a note in our room, Doran said. I'll explain we want to help with Kendra and Seth, and we felt like a fort with a murderer loose was not a safe environment for children.
That's good, Newell said. Sounds responsible.
More responsible than they deserve, Doran said. Who trusts satyrs to babysit?
Very distracted people, Newell said. Shall we pack up and go?
No sense waiting, Doran said.
How did you find the secret door? Knox asked.
When I get bored, I follow people, Doran said. From a distance. A certain minotaur who normally works in the dungeon has used this passage once or twice when he thought he was unobserved.
That's shady, Newell said. Could he be the murderer?
I don't think so, Doran said. I had suspicions too, and watched him carefully. He went to relieve his bladder in the woods and walked under the trees for a short time. Smelled some flowers. I think he just likes to get away from the dungeon from time to time.
Good detective work, Newell said.
Knox, grab your sister. Doran, write the note.
I'll gather supplies.
Tess wandered back over to them and held up a knotted mass of string connected to a yo-yo.
See, I told you it gets tangled.
Chapter 16. Traitor. Kendra sat on the floor in the same room where the dragons had held the feast. Her back was against the wall, and a chain connected an iron shackle on one ankle to a spike in the floor. She had expected a dungeon, but instead she remained in the same vast room with Celebrant and several other dragons. After some goblins had chained her to the spike, she had received no further attention. Seth had not yet appeared, which she considered a good sign. Celebrant had mentioned that he meant to take her brother alive. Hopefully his absence meant he had somehow given the dragons the slip. She tried not to think about him possibly being dead. Watching the dragons was interesting. They were so large, so foreign, so powerful. The way they stretched their necks or flexed their wings, the way their sides billowed as they breathed, the scrape of their claws over the rocky floor of the room. Kendra felt like she was at an exotic zoo, except inside the cage. Even altogether in this huge chamber, the dragons did not socialize much. Most curled up and appeared to sleep. A few paced about. They struck her as basically solitary creatures enduring a social environment.
"Want a drink?" someone asked.
Kendra looked up and found that Ronadin had approached.
"You're still here?"
"You're back,"
Ronadin said, sitting down beside her and handing her a cup.
"Just water. Nothing gross. I brought some berries, too."
He set a bowl between them.
"Lots of good leftovers from the feast still."
"Why are you being so nice to me?" Kendra asked. "What do you want?"
"I believe in courtesy," Ronadin said. "We want a civilized world."
"Are you after Bracken's horn?" she asked.
"Always," Ronadin said.
Nobody could take it from you if they tried. They didn't bother to confiscate any of your gear. Careless. Never underestimate an enemy.
You think I can cause trouble chained up here? Kendra asked.
Many of our worst choices are made due to overconfidence, Ronadin said.
You seem confident, Kendra said.
Ronadin smiled.
I'm in touch with reality, so of course I'm confident.
But overconfidence is sloppy. Have some berries. I selected only the ripest.
Kendra eyed the bowl. What if they were poisoned or sabotaged somehow?
If I wanted to harm you, there are easier ways, Ronadin said.
I'm not supposed to underestimate an enemy, Kendra said.
I captured Bracken and helped the dragons, Ronadin said.
I guess that looks bad. The berries are fine.
Kendra took out Bracken's horn and used it to stir the berries.
You're teasing me, Ronadin said. I'm purifying your offering, Kendra replied.
She put the horn away and tried a raspberry.
Ronadin was right. It was perfect.
Thanks.
Festival night tomorrow, Ronadin said.
That will probably be the night you lose the war.
Feels like I already lost, Kendra said.
Ronadin laughed lightly.
You personally may have already lost, but this is just the start.
Your whole side probably loses tomorrow.
The dragons win.
This is because of your advice? Kendra asked.
It's impolite to brag, Ronadin said.
You shouldn't be proud, Kendra said. What did you tell them?
He popped a berry into his mouth.
I'm almost tempted to tell you. Here you are, chained up and helpless. If we're going to have a war, a connoisseur wants it at least to be interesting. Do you like sports?
Generally, yes, Kendra said.
How about basketball?
Sure.
Right now, the dragons are ahead of the children by at least 70 points, Ronadin said.
Their players are seasoned pros, spectacular athletes, most of them over 7 feet tall.
The children are a team of young novices, still trying to learn to dribble, and none have reached the 5-foot mark.
How much fun is it to watch that lopsided game?
Fun if you like the dragons, Kendra said.
Ronadin winced.
Is it?
Even if you adore the dragons, you want them to be tested a little. A discerning fan hopes for some excitement, a chance for talent to be displayed, an opportunity for some heroism.
What can you tell me? Kendra asked.
Nothing, Ronadin said. I'm Team Dragons all the way.
I was just explaining why giving you a hint is tempting.
I think it's kind of funny that you're scared to give me a tip, Kendra said.
She shook her leg, jangling her chain.
Not scared, just careful, Ronadin said.
No need to take unnecessary risks, especially with nothing in return.
He leaned close, and his voice dropped to a whisper.
Kendra tried to ignore the sincere intensity in his eyes. How crazy was she to find anything about him charming under these conditions?
Now, if you give me Bracken's horn, I will tell you the secret, and break you out of here tonight.
Kendra paused. What good was the horn if the dragons won? What would happen to the horn if the dragons killed her? Could Ronadin just take it away?
I'm sorry, Kendra said. The children want to win on their own.
You hesitated, Ronadin said. It's a good deal.
Why do you want the horn? Kendra asked.
Too many questions, Ronadin said. It's creating a toxic atmosphere.
He stood up. You want a guaranteed loss instead of a chance.
Interesting strategy.
I'll leave you to it.
Enjoy the berries.
He walked away. Kendra tugged on the chain. It was secure.
She needed a plan. But what could she do? They had not confiscated her bow, but if she shot any arrows, they probably would.
And what good were arrows against dragons? She could use her sack to make wind, but again, they would just take it from her when it ran out. She was chained up. She was stuck. And Ronadin was gone. If he came back, should she consider his offer? Not if it might make Bracken vulnerable to him. It wasn't worth it. She would rather die. Bracken had trusted her with the horn. She had to hold true to that. A goblin blew a trumpet.
"Announcing the somber night,"
the goblin declared. Kendra stood, her chain rattling. The somber knight came striding into the room, an imposing figure encased in full armor that left no flesh visible. He held an enormous sword with another smaller one across his back, a slender chain looped at his side, and several knives in various sheaths. It looked like he had seen some fighting recently. His armor was scuffed, with grassy clods of earth stuck here and there. A huge bull made of tar trailed behind him.
"You are unwelcome, Sir Knight,"
Celebrant said from his platform at the far end of the great hall.
"If I were welcome here, I would be doing my job poorly,"
the somber knight said, still walking.
"You recently slew two of my subjects,"
Celebrant said.
"You recently declared war,"
the somber knight replied.
"I am a caretaker,"
Celebrant said.
"You serve me."
"I am here to remedy that,"
the somber knight said, coming to a standstill.
"The dragons I dispatched were attacking a caretaker."
He gestured at Kendra.
"You have the other caretaker chained up here, and you have declared war."
"Mind your tongue,"
Celebrant said.
"Soon I will be the sole overseer of Worm Roost."
"Not so,"
the somber knight said, raising his sword.
"As dragon slayer of Worm Roost, enforcer of the treaty, I find you in violation of your caretaker's oath."
"Nonsense,"
Celebrant said.
"The other caretakers were out of order."
"You were only ever a junior caretaker to them,"
the somber knight said.
"I hereby revoke your title, including all rights and privileges as a caretaker of Worm Roost."
He planted the tip of the sword against the stone floor. A small shockwave radiated outward from that point, accompanied by a sound like breaking glass. Kendra smiled. Stripping Celebrant of his role as caretaker was a step in the right direction.
"Very well,"
Celebrant said, anger in his tone.
"Who needs to be a lowly caretaker when he is king? Stripping my title is an act of aggression. You no longer have heraldic immunity."
"Your move,"
the somber knight said.
"Attack him,"
Celebrant called.
"Destroy him!"
Kendra gasped as dragons swept in from all directions, blocking the somber knight from view. His bull charged one of the dragons from behind. Grabbing her sack of gales, Kendra pointed the mouth toward the knight and loosed the drawstring. With the howl of a raging typhoon, wind gushed from the mouth of the sack. The dragons who were airborne immediately twisted in crooked ways, three of them slamming brusquely against the far wall. Only those on the ground could resist the gale, keeping low, wings tucked. The wind did not seem to bother the somber knight, who was busy carving deep gashes into the base of an orange dragon's neck. Kendra felt a rush of air from one side and found Raxtus had landed beside her. She had not seen the fairy dragon since Jaleesa had taken her captive. Should she turn the sack on him? Was he attacking? Before she could determine his intent, Raxtus quickly bit through the chain near her ankle, leaving only a few links connected to the manacle. "Come on," Raxtus said, grabbing Kendra with his front claws and springing into the air. Kendra yanked the drawstring closed.
"Raxtus!"
Celebrant thundered.
Don't do this! Traitor! Stop him!
Raxtus zoomed toward the exit as other dragons closed on him. He spiraled and weaved to avoid swiping claws and gnashing teeth. A large black dragon blocked the exit, but Raxtus swooped up